This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This is iFanboy Booksplode, Avengers West Coast Vision Quest.
California's been good to me. Hope it don't fall into the sea. Sometimes you got to trust yourself. It ain't like anywhere else. It ain't like anywhere else.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Booksplode. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hey, Connor.
And we are here talking about Avengers West Coast Vision Quest on our Booksplode show, unlocked by the patrons over at patreon.com/ifanboy. The Booksplode show is a bi-monthly show where Josh and I will take a look at a collected edition, an original graphic novel. Anything larger than a regular comic book is eligible for the Booksplode show. And this month, we're very excited to be talking about a book closer to our hearts than we probably realized before reading this.
I think that's clear.
Originally, the idea was, and there'll be spoilers for this book that came out many, many years ago, WandaVision was hugely popular, and we thought, let's talk about a book in which some of the story was pulled from, where they got their inspiration for some of WandaVision. And it turned out to be prescient on many levels, which we'll get to in a second. Avengers West Coast Vision Quest. The collection was published in May 2015, and it includes West Coast Avengers 42 to 46, and then the newly renamed Avengers West Coast 47 to 50.
That's very specific.
The first eight issues of John Byrne's run. He did only seven more issues. I don't know why they just didn't do the whole collection of John Byrne's run in this particular book.
There's going to be questions about that in general.
But the first issue, the West Coast Avengers 42, came out March 1989, which was our final year of junior high school.
That's my time.
Yes.
That's the most fervent comics indoctrination era for me.
1989 was the first year I started going weekly to the comic store.
Yeah.
I had a pull list. I definitely read all these comics that we're going to talk about. Yeah.
It was the first time that I became aware of a creator whose work I then looked for. Mm-hmm. And that was John Byrne. You know, I would say that this was before Amazing Spider-Man, or at least similar, but Todd McFarlane was always on that one thing. John Byrne would do other stuff.
He did a lot of things,
And you could go find like old issues of John Byrne stuff. And then, you know, like I got the Phoenix Saga and he, you know, I was like, oh, he drew this, you know, like I'd start to put those things together. And so for 12-year-old Josh to see where 40-year-old Josh is now, you know, that same thing.
28-year-old Josh.
That train has sailed. And then at the same time, it also taught me one other thing, because I remember being in college age, I guess it was probably around the end of college, and John Byrne was going to do, he did do this Spider-Man chapter one thing. And I was mm-hmm. like, awesome. He's going to retell the Spider-Man story in his style. And it was terrible. I remember being so disappointed because I was like, oh, great. Since I started reading comics again, I haven't seen much of John Byrne, so this will be exciting. And it was terrible. And that's when you sort of learn, like, John Byrne got a little eccentric in the intervening years. Or maybe he always was, and we just learned about it.
Well, he's certainly a creator who fell off of the zeitgeist in terms of what he wanted to make or could make was not what people wanted to read. And that's a bummer because I think we're both saying the same thing. I mean, I was thinking about this while I was reading this book, and he is certainly, when you talk about the all-time most important creators in comics, I think he's in the top 10 discussion. But for me, personally, like you talk about the personal most important creators, he's in the top three, at least. And I've never actually ranked them, but he just happened to peak.
You're considering that all-time, though. Like, you still consider that. Like,
for me, in terms of my fandom...
Yeah. He
peaked, just like you said, when we were the right age, you know. So I started reading comics. You know, John Byrne did all the most important books. He did Superman after Crisis. He did the Legends minis, the first event after Crisis. He did Fantastic Four. She-Hulk was a huge book in the 80s. He did then you went backwards, he did the X-Men run with Chris Claremont, and they did West Coast Avengers. He was always in that 80s.
He did a Namor series around that time.
In the 90s.
That's the only reason I read it, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And then when he left and Jay Lee took over, I was like, what the fuck is this? I remember specifically, because I think Byrne did the first cover of Lee's run, and then you open it up, and I was like, whoa, no. Anyway, so as a kid reading comics in the 80s, you know, John Byrne was the top name in the 80s for a variety of reasons. And so for me, he's always going to be the one, for my personal canon, he's going to be in the top list. Maybe not number one, but he's definitely in the top in the discussion, just from a personal fandom. And I'm not, you know, now as a older person looking back and appreciating a whole range of creators, we talked about this before. He's the next step after Kirby. He's not the next step. He's like two steps past Kirby. You know, Kirby happens, and then you have like guys
Buscema.
Like Buscema, Neil, and Gaiman, not Gaiman, Adams happen. And then Byrne is the logical progression into the 80s that started in the 60s with Kirby. He's of the Kirby school. Mm-hmm. Even though he did a lot of DC work, for me, he's a Marvel guy.
Oh, yeah. And that's sort of how I knew him also at the same time. So, but I think that what's interesting about this is that...
Even though he drew the definitive Superman, for me, he's still a Marvel guy.
And other than the fact that the styles in this book are somewhat dated, you know, the way the hair looks, the costumes or whatever, but they're really of the time, the actual draftsmanship...
Oh, it's terrific.
...is still... as good or better than anything I can think of.
Which is why he was such a big deal, because he was he was at another level than most people at that time. Other than like George Perez or people like that.
And he's writing it too. But like even in that little list, you know, I knew of all those people at the time, but really Byrne was the one who, like, to this day, because of, you know, the timing of it, like, I like his work better than Alan Davis or than George Perez or, you know, any of those other guys. John Romita or Romita Jr. was doing stuff at this time. Like, this was the guy, like, there was something really special about it, even more so than McFarlane, because it holds up a lot better for me.
Yeah.
That, you know, as a person who has become a student of the comic book art form, as I read through this, like, it does so many things well.
Oh, yeah.
His draftsmanship, his anatomy, his acting, his character work, his facial, like, it's all still excellent. That's very much of a time. Everybody's got the bulky superhero body. Everybody's a little exaggerated. It's certainly of a time, but... like the work that he's doing on like Tigra, who is sort of in different stages of being a cat,
yes.
And like the way that he could draw a Quinjet flying around.
And he very much the Kirby technology, you know, their Malibu compound is full of lots of computers and things that are very much Kirby inspired.
Yep.
So the story starts off. So the West Coast Avengers, first of all, that book went over 100 issues.
Yeah.
This is a big book at the time. This is issue 42, where we awaken on the Scarlet Witch. She wakes up, checks on her two kids, and the Vision is not in bed with her, and he's missing. And that sort of kicks off the whole book. This collection is called Vision Quest, and it's all about what happened to Vision, where'd he go. That's the main thrust of the most of this book. And first of all, what this brought me back to was a way of comic book making that is completely foreign now to people who weren't reading comics or have never read comics from this era. I'd sunk into this book like a warm bath. It was... you know, captions that talk to you, self-aware, talking about, oh, this happened last issue, or the first caption saying, moments after our last issue, you know, like, very much aware of the fact that it's a comic book, and very much reveling in the idea that, and it's very much a Stan Lee thing.
Yeah.
Come here, kid. We're all sort of in this book together. You know, I'm going to talk to you as if we are just sort of hanging out, and the book will. And, you know, very overwrought and very dramatic and very melodramatic. And, you know, the classic Marvel storytelling here where the arc never ends. It's not six issues and we're out. It's like, it's a continuous story. And I think it's one of the reasons why people are so connected to these books and comics in general is because if you came up reading books at this time, the story never ended. You know, it just weaved in and out. The B plot became the A plot, the C plot became the B plot, A plot went back to C.
It was a soap opera. I mean, in the classic sense, it was exactly the same sort of format in that way.
And I just remember the feeling of this never-ending saga. You know, it's not the feeling that you get now where an arc ends, the trade is going to be collected, and you start over again with a new arc. It's just like, this story never stopped. And, you know, we'll talk about the ending of this book and how you can read more of it in another collection, which we did a little bit, and it's just like, oh, well, the story is still going. You know, it's not like the arc ends. There's no arc.
It's why all the trades from this era are like 500 pages long. Right. Like, we don't know here.
It just went on for years. The same story went on, and it was things bubbled up to become more important, but the way of writing comics changed so dramatically in terms of how you plotted things, and it just, this is an old school, gloriously old school way. I love this collection.
I think that speaks to the fact that, I will say, like, It took me, I want to say 5 to 10 pages to settle in. Meaning that, like, at first you're like, ooh, a lot of talking. Is it going to be? Because there's a lot of bad comics from this era too that don't really. But once I sort of got what it was, everything after that was golden. I was like, all right, okay, all right, we're in the mode. Let's go.
It was a lot you have to adjust to. You got to adjust to classic Hawkeye, which is not.
Oh, listen,
Hawkeye.
You need to reserve 20 to 40 minutes for that. That is okay, going to be a thing that
then I'm
going to
need another 30 minutes on Wonder Man's mullet. But all right,
that's fine. So I think that one of the things that's really interesting that I don't think happens today is that, you know, you and I and people like us, it's not just us, obviously, like a lot of the people who listen to the show and talk to us remember a lot of stuff about comics that they didn't necessarily read. And I think that that is because things really were connected to other things in the Marvel universe in a way that it isn't today. And this, you know, again, that's a Stan Lee thing.
Yeah.
But you know about these histories because, like, it was just like you said, like a story and a character go on and on for years, and they're constantly referring back to the things that happened because they really did treat every issue as if it was somebody's first.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got inculcated into the history very quickly. And so you became familiar with it, even if you hadn't gone back to read all of it. Like, I haven't read every story that had to do with the Shi'ar, but I got it when they showed up. I understood what that meant, or the Skrulls, or, you know, when Ultron shows up. Like, you didn't, it's odd because to know about everything that was going, you didn't actually need to read everything, which is really interesting.
You got it by osmosis through the other books that would refer to it. I mean, there's several characters here that show up halfway through, where it's like, you know, you recall that in Avengers 742. It's like, oh, you're right, I did. Or no, I didn't. I got to figure out what that is. I also should mention briefly, just to Byrne also did a great run on Avengers itself. Yeah. So that was another book as a kid. Like, when I think of the Avengers, I think of the way John Byrne. Like, all these characters, like, almost like my perfect vision of them, no pun intended, is the way Byrne draws them. Like, the way Vision looks, the way Wonder Man looks, the way Hawkeye looks, the way Tiger looks. And, you know, even here we get a, you know, flashback to Cap, and Cap shows up for an issue, and the way Cap looks, it's just like, this is in my lizard brain, sort of the way these characters should look is the way that Byrne draws them.
So at the time that this was coming out, I was buying them, and I remember being drawn more to West Coast Avengers. And I was reading at the time of the switch from West Coast to Avengers West Coast, just because it was like slightly left of center. And it was slightly weird and that kind of thing. You know, if you've listened to this show, like, that's exactly what I want to look for. And then at the same time, like, the art was so much better than anything else I was reading. I was like, this is perfect. And you get into, and so for years, you've been listening to this show. I have said Hawkeye is my favorite or one of my favorite characters. Mm-hmm. And then we've been grousing about him for probably 75% of the time we've been doing this show. And as I read through this book, it 100% came to me why.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm reading this character, and I'd forgotten what he was like. Because
totally different character than Houston.
Well, here's my reading of Clint Barton of this era, mm-hmm. and it's that he is extremely self-conscious.
Yep.
He is overcompensating constantly. He is not a second-tier Captain America. He's a guy who really loves and respects Captain America and does not have anything that that guy has.
He recognizes he's a different guy. He's yeah, not, but he's not that guy.
He's a little petty. He's a good guy. He wants to do the right thing, but he's a little petty.
Insecure.
He can't. He's totally insecure, and it's funny. Like, because this guy is the head of this team, but he has to keep bringing up the fact that nobody seems to remember it.
Hey, I'm the chairman.
And like, everything he says is overdramatic. And it wasn't, I don't think I love the character like, oh, he's the best hero. It was really fun to read this guy in this team. I had so much fun with it. And he was so like, but at the same time, he was also so entitled. Oh, it just, everything was... And everything was amped up, you know, 15% past what any real human would ever say. You know, that sort of drama that came with
everyone's
everything that
Mr.
happened.
Listen, yeah, Mr.
And like every time there's a couple, they call each other lover all the time. They literally made a sketch on SNL about that. I don't know if that was just funny to comic book people, but I remember that. That was
even
all the time.
Even Mockingbird and Hawkeye, who were broken up. But so the team of on this book, when it starts, the first issue team is Scarlet Witch, Hawkeye, Henry Pym, who doesn't ever put on a costume, right? He just is in Henry Pym.
He's not. Yeah. Does he actually shrink at any point in this? He shrinks.
He uses the Pym particles to shrink things.
Right. He doesn't shrink himself ever.
I think I'd forgotten that he would just kind of like throw Pym particles at things and they would shrink. Tigra.
And again, this is my first Ant-Man. So I just thought of him as the scientist who doesn't really get involved directly, right, other than, you know, which is interesting.
So it's Scarlet Witch, Vision, Hawkeye, Henry Pym, Tigra, Wonder Man, the Wasp, and Mockingbird joins unofficially in this issue.
Well, she had just left, and then she comes back.
That's where the team starts here, and it'll change slightly before we get to the end of this. But it's a fun group. You know, these are all, you know, they're all Avengers. You know, Hawkeye, obviously, Scarlet Witch, Wonder Man was an Avenger. Henry Pym, obviously, and Wasp are founding Avengers. But it's a great grouping of not your marquee names at the time. But you put them together and you get a really interesting dynamic between them. And everyone's in love with each other and everyone's sleeping together. And
that's what I was going to say. This thing is brimming with sexual tension.
Yes.
It's every page. I mean, Tigra is, you know, that symbolism is pretty obvious. You've got the weird Vision Scarlet Witch thing. You've got, you know, Hank and Janet, you know, are, I don't even remember if they were together or not during this. It was kind of ambiguous.
No, because in the beginning I'm literally looking at a page right here, page 34, digital reader. He says, Janet, like he's trying to call her darling. Right. So they had just broken up.
This is some Fleetwood Mac rumors shit. Yeah. I mean, it is, it is a tangled web. I know that was part of the appeal to it as a kid.
Oh, sure.
Because it was, you know, there was an adult theme, but it was so subtly sort of placed in there that you're like, something's happening here that I do not understand at all.
But I want to.
I think that the person making this has got some issues. Like, I didn't understand any of that, but I knew it was happening and affecting me.
It's a rollicking adventure as the Vision has disappeared. And, you know, what's great about this book is, and the way they wrote this book and the way that it's constructed is, the reason why he's disappeared, he's been kidnapped by a global consortium of governments because he had taken over the control of the world's nuclear arsenal. But that was in a previous issue. So I got all that through them telling me that. You know, I never felt lost about what was happening. It was all explained. So he's been kidnapped because they realize he's too dangerous. And they basically dismantle him. So this is where you start sort of seeing where the inspiration for WandaVision comes in. In that there's a scene here very similar to WandaVision where when they track him down, Wanda goes into a room and you just see him in pieces all over the place. And it's very similar to what they did on the show.
That was straight out of there.
She's even on a balcony above it. And it was disturbing, you know, he's all, you know, skins in one corner. And so then you get a lot of it into what is the deal with these two? Because when he comes back, it's the white version without any context. He's been rebooted, but his memories have been gone, and they wiped everything from the computer. So this synthezoid, who was, well, we get into really what he is in this book, made from the brain waves of Wonder Man, who is in love with Scarlet Witch, no longer
his brain waves,
right, no longer has those feelings. And what does that mean? You know, if really it was just Wonder Man who was in love with Scarlet Witch, what does that mean for Vision and Wanda to get? Like, it's all very deep.
Oh, totally.
It was really deep. And then, you know, Cap shows up with She-Hulk, and Byrne did a celebrated run on She-Hulk, and Cap's great. A lot of good things.
She-Hulk is wearing like the Jane Fonda workout gear of the time, which is hilarious. And she like I think she wore that. That was like her costume for
yeah.
a while.
Yeah, it was.
Just aerobics wear. So there's a couple of things in here that I think that stuck with me. And we could try to explain the plot, but it's Byzantine. It goes all over the place. So one of the first things that happens is that you find out that they're like, who is responsible for Vision being taken out of here? And in the very last page, Mockingbird, who has recently left the team and is in the middle of getting a divorce, is standing in the doorway, and she's like, what's the matter, lover? Aren't you pleased to see your little wifey again? And just before that panel, by the way, in a very tiny little letter, he goes, oh no, which is great. And so, and you cut in the first issue, first page of the next issue is just his angry face. Hawkeye. You!
Yeah. It's a great close-up, too.
It is, but it very quickly then switches to her going, basically explaining that she was duped by these people and she's sorry she did it. And I thought, why did you act like that at the end of the next page, of the last page? And somebody asked her in the issue, and she's like, yeah, I don't know. I was kind of worried about the whole thing, so that's how I acted. It was weird. And I was just so happy that they explained that moment, because it was really weird. And so I was like, why'd you do that? And they just explained it. It was just like, I don't know. I was acting weird. I don't know. And there's a ton of that in here.
You know, the close-up, I love the close-up on Hawkeye, and I realize one of the things we've lost over the years as the books shrank in page count was the opening splash page. You know, the dramatic first shot, which, you know, I've seen creators discussing. You just can't lose the real estate these days. You know, they would love to open a book with a giant dramatic splash page, but you lose however many panels of storytelling when you do that now, because you only have 20 pages instead of, you know, 22, 23 before. So, but it was always fun to open the book on a big dramatic moment, you know?
Yeah. I've been reading Preacher again, and they do that a lot in that book. And what's funny, interesting from an interesting economic standpoint, I'm guessing artists, those pages probably sell really well for them.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You know, so that's gone.
So I'm reading through this book, and we get to sort of not halfway, but maybe a third through, and a new member is joining the team as mandated by the government, because if you recall back then, the Avengers and the government had a strange relationship where there was always some sort of liaison on the team. And in the doorway, it looks like it's Cap, but it's not Cap, it's U.S. Agent. And that was interesting because in addition to WandaVision, now we have the Falcon and the Winter Soldier going on with them mining the Mark Gruenwald era of Captain America, which includes the introduction of John Walker, who is now on the team here. So it was very interesting to see how these two current Marvel TV shows completely coincidentally are tied into this particular volume of comics.
Yeah.
And so then you get stalwart John Walker, who I still, as you know, kind of hate.
John Walker, I loved that costume at the time.
I thought, sure.
That looks amazing.
Yeah.
He's a Marvel utility player. He is what they need him to be at the time. So sometimes he's stick up his ass, you know, hardcore government guy. Sometimes there's a Mark Gruenwald miniseries. I think he wrote it. There's about four issues. And it's like, he's like, what am I doing? Like, he's just like, you get into his head and he's like way out of his league. There was the bit, I think he's in a wheelchair now. And he ran, he was like the head of the Thunderbolts, or he ran the prison where the Thunderbolts are based out of. I mean,
that miniseries about him is wrapping up that we're reading now. But yeah, he's here. He's totally like asshole bureaucrat character.
Yeah.
He's the one that calls everyone Mr. Listen, Mr. This is the way it is. I'm on the team. Deal with it.
And he comes in and out of it a lot. I mean, like, he kind of shows up and he's like a big deal. And then we don't see him for a while. And then he sort of comes back, and then he's sort of a side player for a bit.
My favorite
There's
bit is
a bit where he. Are you going to say what I'm going to say?
Is it about the clothes?
Yep. Exactly. I'm looking at the page.
Page 90. Yeah. The Vision comes back. He's all white. He's not wearing clothes. Although he doesn't have any genitals, so I don't see the big deal. But you heard me, robot. As long as I'm on this team, we'll have some decency around here. Get some clothes on now, mister. Oh, so good.
It's really fun. I laughed a lot reading this book.
Yeah.
And then let us not skip over the Great Lakes Avengers.
Yeah, which was interesting because it made me realize that, and I don't think I ever realizes to the extent that Hawkeye's sort of natural inclination is to start teams. Like, he started the West Coast Avengers, and then he sort of leaves that for an issue, and he goes and he takes over the leadership of the Great Lakes Avengers, which is just a bunch of random people with powers in the Great Lakes area. And then later on, you know, not too much later on, you have him, you know, leading the Thunderbolts. Yeah. So it is interesting that they sort of have him as the guy who heads the new team.
He wants to be as good as Captain America.
Right.
And like, that's his thing. It's a little petty. It's a little bit vanity. It's not whatever Hawkeye is now, and we've completely lost it. Now, that being said, I don't know that that character fits in very well if, like, he was in the Avengers movie. You'd be like, why wouldn't they kick this guy off the team?
He's annoying.
In these comic books, which is why Hawkeye isn't in the Avengers movies, some character named Clint Barton is fine.
Jeremy Renner is.
Like, he's more like John Walker in those.
Yeah. You get the Great Lakes Avengers, who are just a bunch of, you know, people with powers trying to help that Hawkeye gets involved with. Those were fun issues, too.
Yeah, they were. And I think that those characters were also very different than everything else. They you know, they were, again, trying to do the right thing. But, you know, Mr. I is immortal. You know, he can't die.
He's so great. That was a great patron power. That was just like,
yeah,
he dies and he resurrects.
Yeah.
I loved the guy who made the door.
The doorman.
He was great.
He was great. There's Flatman, who's... It's like flat. Mr. Fantastic, but he's totally fat. And then there's Big Bertha, who's international supermodel, who gets really fat. And then she's like impervious to danger and super strong.
Yeah.
Oh, and the Manta Ray lady. Either way, though, like, the personalities on those characters were really unique and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. Like, they were just some Midwest folks trying to do their best. It was very fitting for the thing that was called the Great Lakes Avengers. And they're like, well, Midwest Avengers didn't sound right. And again, I remember getting that issue and looked at the cover and going, this is amazing. And then, you know, you cut to Hawkeye watching the train. He's just going, no, no, no. Yeah, it's like a perfect 80s training montage.
Yeah.
And all of this stuff comes together. You know, the covers are one of the best parts of this because they have text all over them. It's so fun.
Yeah, and so you get a lot of greatest hits here. Like, Black Panther shows up to try to help. We get Star Fox for a minute. What's great about that is that, you know, we see Star Fox out with Nebula in space, and then we get the caption saying, actually, we'll get back to this in a few issues. You know, like, it's just a teaser for you as a kid to go, oh, man, when's that going to happen? You know, in a way that would never happen now. And then, like I said, Captain America and She-Hulk show up, and by the end of it, you know, things are really crazy. But what I think is interesting also throughout this is, you know, you get the seeds of Wanda's madness here. I don't remember how early on this started, but it's certainly seeded out throughout this is there's something going on with her kids. And she starts talking about mutants and humans as being different. And she starts getting real short temper. And, you know, she started cracking here, which is something that will play out for the years up and through House of M in the 2000s.
You know, that was the thing I think that I had one of the hardest times with when I was younger is... If you had asked me, like, well, what was the deal with her kids and Vision and Master Pandemonium?
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't have explained it to you. I couldn't remember what happened when those people captured her and assimilated her. I understood it all this time, obviously.
Right.
And so that was also really interesting to go back because I just could not fathom what was happening. Like, the villain in that one miniseries or that one sort of storyline where she's captured and assimilated, and that's where she comes up with sort of these more pro-mutant ideas. Like, it was such a weird thing. There was no villain that you could see. And that's why I couldn't remember it, because there wasn't one. But either way, you know, the through line of this is always that, like, Wanda's really dangerous and unstable. And, you know, there's a pretty classic element of 70s Marvel sexism going on there that I think we saw go through the X-Men at the time. And it's just a part of these men trying to figure things out who are making these comics. But it is compelling. And I think that in a way, you know, how they adapted it for the more modern motion picture version of it works pretty well.
Yeah, it comes from her grief.
It's not quite so much femme fatale who can't quite get what she wants but has a ton of power. Because she's an asshole in this.
Yeah.
But there's kind of a reason for it. Really, and I don't think this is... So this ends with issue 50. But actually, like, to understand everything, you have to read issue 51. Where Agatha Harkness explains everything.
Yeah, it gives you the sort of what happened with the kids and who the kids are. The kids are constructs. And
they should have done that wrap-up with Wally's kids, man.
God.
It was just like... Nah, they're gone now. Nobody remembers. Don't worry about it. And I was like, there you go. That's the deal.
So, but issue 50 is one of my favorites. I remember this cover as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, this is it. The riotous return of the original Human Torch, as we see the Human Torch bursting out of a graveyard in that terrific way they used to draw the torches that they don't do anymore. So the whole idea previously was the Vision was the body of the original Human Torch. The android was the body, and then the brain was from Wonder Man. And we learn here, in fact, that's not the case. The Human Torch was not the body. And so this is a way to bring back the original Human Torch character who we talked about recently. And we get to kind of do Captain America all over again because he's a character from, you know, he made it to the 50s. He made it through the war into the 50s. So now we get the whole idea of this guy coming back to life into the Marvel Universe, one of the original heroes. And he's a great character. And I love this issue.
This run really made me fall in love with about three characters who I really love to this day. Clint Barton and the Vision and the original Human Torch, because, you know, that cover to me is, you know how you talk about.
I can just remember seeing it on the stands or in the comic shop.
I just thought, I want to know all about this.
Yeah.
And also, you know, we always talk about the best superhero costume of all time. The best design is the Flash.
Yep.
This design, while not a superhero costume, I think is like my favorite sort of design that keeps coming back.
The flame on torch version?
The way that the torch works, with the way that they would draw the inking lines to sort of show the flame rippling on the outside. And you know, Byrne drew Fantastic Four, so this is what Johnny Storm looked like there. But just that image is just so great.
With the lines around the muscles and no facial features.
Yep.
It was more unsettling now than the way they do it now with Photoshop. And I mean, it looks really pretty and, you know, you can. But like, it just doesn't.
It probably makes more sense, but
it's more. This is a more evocative image for me. Is the way they did it here. And as a kid, I was like, "Who is?" I mean, I don't remember if I had a knowledge of Jim Hammond then, but I just remember being like, "What?"
Yeah. So then they introduced the very familiar West Coast Avengers problem of a fourth blonde guy probably wearing red, because there's.
So you got Clint, Pym, Hammond.
You take off John Walker's hood. He looks just like that, too.
That's four of them.
There's one bit where, like, I actually took a picture of it. I could post it at some point. Jim Hammond and Henry Pym are standing next to each other. It's like, that's the same person. They're both, like, they look exactly the same. So we could sit here and praise John Byrne to high heaven, but he didn't bother with that part.
Oh, he had Byrne face. You know, guys all had the same face. That's fine.
Yep, true.
You know, a lot of artists have the face. You know, we joked about it in... Whose run was it? It was
Hardman drawing Secret Avengers.
Right. They were all blonde dudes. And the Avengers had a lot of blonde dudes on the team. That's all right.
Listen, mister.
And, you know, this particular trade ends on a great cliffhanger in which Iron Man is back and he's flying in.
So what's really interesting about that is that the first West Coast Avengers miniseries also features Iron Man, but it's James Rhodes.
Right.
And he's trying not to let anybody know that he's not Tony Stark.
And we talked about that because it's actually funny. This is the second book split we've done on the West Coast Avengers. We did the first collection of the original issues, I don't know, last year before. Mm-hmm. And we talked about that very thing where it was like, I'm Iron Man, but I can clearly see that you're black under there.
Like, yeah. And then so as you go to the, I went and I read the issue after this because I had to know. But it's like the same thing. Like,
he can't tell
anybody who he is. In fact, I don't know if they told me. I'm pretty sure it's Tony Stark, but they didn't really.
No, it is. I read the issue too, the next issue, 51.
Yeah.
He talks about it in his head. Like, you know, he's stuck in the suit for health reasons. He can't tell anybody.
Oh, right,
because
he'd been shot.
And then when John Walker leaves and it's just Pym and Wonder Man and Janet, they're like, but you're Tony, right? And he's like, I can't tell you.
<It's> so good. Oh, it was so much, you know, because I read this when I was really young and, you know, a lot of times that stuff doesn't hold up in the way that I would want it to. You know, I've watched a lot of movies that I liked as a kid and go, this is pretty dumb, man. This, I don't know if it is after just reading so many comics for so long, it just sinks right to the core of the thing that made me fall in love with this art form.
Oh, I mean, 100%.
Right there.
And you struggle with the idea of, okay, let's say they flip the switch and they started making comics like this again. Would I love it as much like I did reading these? And I don't know. Maybe I would, maybe I won't. But I do want to love this.
I think in comics what happens is like, I was like, where one goes, all go. So I was like, no, that's Q. But, you know, what happens is those trends sort of move out everywhere. So you can't have some comics like that. I want some of everything.
Yeah.
I want some comics like this, and I want some comics like Rug Rucka makes, and I want some comics like Grant Morrison makes.
Well, the thing is, you have to commit to this. You can't just have one book be like this. Well, I guess you could, right. But the whole universe was like this at the time, so it felt like a cohesive piece. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you could do just one book that was like this.
I don't think that this could compete now. No. It's just too much of a stretch for the art form. It's really interesting because we were talking about every issue being your first. Mm-hmm. And how everything was sort of tied together, but everything was tied together in a way that wasn't, that didn't feel...
It wasn't exclusionary.
No, it wasn't compelling you to go buy the other thing. It was like, this is also happening over there if you're interested. Whereas now, you know, an event's going, well, do I have to buy all the issues of the event? I mean, maybe that's because comics are $5 a piece now instead of 75 cents. But it wasn't that. Now, and the issue that comes after, again, in that next sort of trade, or there's basically... I think there's four volumes so far of West Coast Avengers. And so the fourth one, which is the most recent one that came out, has issue 51 is the second to last issue. And the next issue after that is an annual. And it's the first of the Atlantis attacks, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, though, so that was a crossover and it went across everything. But it just wasn't the same thing.
Right.
It didn't. It's weird because, like I said, there was no beginning and there was no end. Everything was tied together, but you really could like jump into a part of the pool for a while, soak it up, jump out, be in a different pool, see how those two things come together. It was much more nonlinear than it is now.
It's a never-ending saga. It's a never-ending.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like that's how I get you. The story keeps going, and like you said, you can, I'm done with this for a while, but you can always come back, and it's you'll never be totally lost because, like you said, and I said, it's. They give you the context. They give you the people. Everyone's named. The powers are all mentioned. Mm-hmm. Previous plot points that are important are illuminated, or they tell you when they happened. It was a different style where you can read whole comics these days and you never know the characters' names, or you never know what their abilities are.
Well, it was trying really hard to be cool, and this hadn't really been affected. So what's this? You say 89?
89, yeah.
This hadn't really been affected by Watchmen, Dark Knight, you know, Byrne was over here like, yeah, I'm going to make my melodramatic soap opera comics that like me and Chris did, you know, and, you know, at some point comics changed a lot after this.
Well, yeah. And then shortly after this, you know, Death of Superman happens in the mid 90s. And then you have Heroes Reborn happens in the later 90s. Then you have Justice League of America by Morrison in the late 90s. And then suddenly everything's different after that.
Also, at the same time that this is happening, you're getting basically the same time as this. And in a way, I think that this represents the culmination of 80s superhero comics in terms of what was really good about them, in terms of the talent of a person like John Byrne. And that's very soon to be replaced by the Image people, by the Jim Lees and the Liefelds. This is happening sort of concurrently over in the X-Men universe at about the same time. And it just subsumes all of this. And then that becomes the big Image boom, and those are the ones selling millions of copies. And then, you know, then the crash happens,
and
this
they take
is
over Avengers and Fantastic Four and Heroes Reborn, because you know at this time it was all about the X-Men. Mm-hmm. I read the X-Men books as a kid, but I was an Avengers guy. Like my buddy Patrick was an X-Men guy. He read all the X-Men books. He was all about the X-Men, and I was I read all the Avengers books, and I was all about the Avengers. But I also did read the X-Men books too. You know, this was the second tier.
Yeah. But I didn't understand that because I was like, this is so much better than that. I don't even know what's going on in that book.
I had so much fun reading this. I really did. I didn't want it to be over.
Yeah. That's why I went and I read more. I was like, all right, I got to have more of this.
I really could have and would have kept reading this story because it's just, it doesn't stop. It's like a train and you're just like, oh, what's happening now? Oh, no, Iron Man's here. That's cool.
And it was good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good in a certain way, but that's not to qualify it. Like it was just.
No, it was very good.
It was like, oh, this is, it really, it was like, I was like, oh, this is why I do this today.
Right.
Oh, it's so beautiful. It was fun. I was laughing. Yep. You know, I was having fun. I wanted to know what was going to happen next because I don't remember it beat for beat. You know, like I was like, well, how are they going to do this?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah. I mean, I put Byrne's art right now against, in this era, in this book, against anything that's coming out now.
Oh, totally.
This guy could be drawing comics right now. And so it looks terrific. It's the classic storytelling style. The characters are compelling. It's very dramatic. And you really want to turn a page. It's funny. Characters come and go. and you feel like you're part of the larger world. This was terrific. I'm so happy.
He's very metered about like his pages that got shit done. Mm-hmm. And then his pages that were meant to, you know, make your, you know, the gasp pages. Right. And in between there, I'm like, his every single shot of Hawkeye in this is fantastic. And then I mean that, like, he's emoting or grouching. Like, there's one, he's on a plane with Bobby at one point and he's hunched in his seat all pissed off. Every single picture of him is funny. It's just, I was like, oh, it so reminded me why I loved that character.
Right.
And when he comes back to do the Thunderbolts 10 years from here, it was exactly this character. They wrote him this way and drew him this way, and it was really fun. And that was sort of the last of that character, which kind of is fine.
Yeah, one thing I really did like about this particular collection is that the original coloring is intact. So we've got Paul Becton was the colorist, at least in the first issue. And it's all flat and beautiful. The cover of this collection features one of the old covers, but it's recolored in the modern style. It's fine, but it doesn't look right. Whereas the flat colors inside, and I am in no way being derogatory when I say flat, just to me look right.
Yeah.
It looks like the way it should look. That's why I've always liked guys like Matt Wilson or whoever now that are more towards this end of the spectrum than the super Photoshop rendered colors.
Well, there was a time when they didn't know how to do it because they were like, look at everything we can do.
The 2000s is terrible.
Yeah. But if you can look at it, they even like added gradients into like the Avengers logo and everything because you have to. And I don't know. I doubt that this book is going to sell to anybody else because they made the color look more like it looked 10 years ago than it did 30 years ago.
It's just more pop arty. I just think, you know, look, comics change, the stylists change, the what people want change. But I'm looking at a random page in this book, page 22 in your digital reader. It's got Vision, old school Vision, in his green and yellow costume. You've got the Avengers, and it's so bright. There's this. It's just, it's like pop art.
Well, the red is the same in everything. Scarlet Witch is, you know, tiara and cape are the same red as Vision's face, which is the same red as Thor's cape, which is the same red as Captain America's costume, you know, and those are sort of peppered throughout the thing. And like those colors really, you know, they separate everything in a way that is totally not realistic, but graphically in this format lets you know exactly where you are all the time. And now it's really familiar feeling. You're like, oh, right, this is what comics were like. This is how you understood them.
Yeah, and the yellow of everyone's hair is the same yellow. Yep. Well, actually, Bobby's hair is not as quite as bright yellow as Hank's. It's, this was an era. This is a return to an era of comics that really defined fandom for lots of people, and ourselves included. I was reading comics years before this, but this was the year, like I said in the beginning, where I really sort of started going every week and really started collecting a lot of books as a kid and spending my allowance or money I made, you know, working odd jobs on comics and in a big way. So this is sort of this is the encapsulation of that moment.
Did you expect to enjoy this as much as you did?
I knew I would like it, but I didn't think I would like it as much as I did.
I agree. Yeah. I thought, when I get into the rhythm of this, I'll probably enjoy it. But I didn't think that I'd be so delighted by it.
Well, off the bat, you've got Hawkeye right off the bat doing target practice in an overly crazy contraption and almost killing Scarlet Witch. So, who gets right out of bed into her costume, which would never happen now either. So much fun. If you read this era and you haven't in a while, I would recommend going back to it. And this is a great collection. Again, I would love just one collection that contains his entire run. I even think the Visionaries John Byrne one is split into two volumes. It is. There's a John Byrne omnibus that includes this and his Avengers stuff. So maybe that's worth getting.
You know what I want to read, and I never have, is I want to read his Fantastic Four run.
I read that off and on. I wasn't again, as a Byrne fan more than a Fantastic Four fan as a kid, I certainly had random issues. Like if they had a guest star, because that's why they did it. Like if I saw Spider-Man on the cover, I'd be like, oh shit, Spider-Man. And I'd buy that one. So when I look back at my old collection, I had random Byrne Fantastic Four issues. But that would be a good one.
I would totally do that. You're right. Like, why is the Hulk in this?
Right. Captain America.
I don't even like the Hulk, but I want to know what he's doing there.
So maybe that's worth exploring later on in our time, is maybe we should look into some Fantastic Four John Byrne.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. So there you go. That's our Booksplode for the month. This is Avengers West Coast Vision Quest, which includes West Coast Avengers 42 to 46, Avengers West Coast 47 to 50, and we loved it. I think you can tell.
You could also find this in the Avengers West Coast Epic Collection Volume 4, I believe, if you wanted to read. All that stuff is inclusive of there, too, which was printed later.
Yeah, it's in many books. It's in the West Coast Avengers Omnibus. It's in the John Byrne Omnibus, Avengers Omnibus. It's a lot of places. Classic run. And we're going to do ratings on it. Ratings.
We have to do ratings, huh?
We don't have to.
That's okay. 4.5.
4.5 is pretty good. 4.5. So check that out at ifanboy.com. There'll be a post for the show. You can come talk about your love or not love, or whatever you feel about the West Coast Avengers, about the John Byrne era, about this particular collection, whatever you want to talk about.
I would be really interested to see if people read this who are younger than us, you know, say like 10 years younger, who didn't come up with these comics. Maybe they came out, you know, after, like so many with the X-Men animated series and came in around that time or after.
Or even.
Yeah, if this does anything for them.
Yeah, it could be very much you had to be there scenario, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, like, you and I didn't have any trouble loving the New Gods.
True.
You know, and that's from a different era. And I think, I mean, it's one of the things actually that is nice, I think, about the era of comics that we're in now is that you do give a lot of opportunities to enjoy different styles of comics that, you know, it was actually kind of homogenous when these books were coming out. Some are really good and some are bad, but they sort of shared a thing. Now there's, you know, there's a lot of different variants in mainstream comics, which I guess is exactly what I said earlier, but I just want a whole a series like this.
Sure. I mean, I kind of want to go back now, and even though we did it before, just start at the beginning and read the whole run of West Coast Avengers.
Yeah.
Well, it'd be a nice little chunk. Anyway, we loved it. Hope you check it out. A lot of people do check out the books we read, and hopefully people did and liked it. And again, like Josh said, if you were not someone from that era of comics and you read it, I'm very curious what you thought of it. And you can tell us at ifanboy.com or at any of the places that you do, any of our social accounts, at ifanboy on Twitter or ifanboycomics on Instagram, any of the places you find us. And we'll be back in 2 months. With another Booksplode, what will we talk about? Who knows? But hopefully it'll be as fun as this one. And until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.